Welcome to Talking New Energy, a podcast from Delta EE, the new energy experts. We'll be talking about how the energy transition is developing across Europe, with guests who are working at the leading edge of this transition. In this week's podcast, we'll be talking about heat as a service. Thomas Edison, in the world's first electricity system, sold light, not kilowatt hours. He provided customers with electricity and electric lamps, effectively selling them lumens. Then, with the advent of meters and cheap light bulbs, customers bought units of energy and light bulbs and have done that ever since. Are we about to come full circle with heat, with customers buying 21 degrees comfort instead of buying kilowatt hours of energy and heating appliance separately? With other industries, from Netflix to the automotive industry, moving from selling products to services, leases and subscriptions is becoming more common. Will the energy and heating sectors meet one of our most basic needs, that of comfort, in this way too? In this episode, I'll be talking with three guests to shed some light on this question. So, let me introduce my first guest, Mikhail Veger. Mikhail, ENGIE is one of Europe's biggest utilities, and you work for them with a wide range of activities. Can you explain a bit about your role at ENGIE and give me some facts and figures about the part of the business you work in, the heating services business in France?
Thank you, John. And in a few words, ENGIE Home Services is a subsidiary of the ENGIE Group, and we are the number one for the maintenance of the heating system on the residential market in France. We have about 1.5 million maintenance contracts and 4,200 employees, mainly technicians or engineers. And we are covering 100% of the French territory through our 200 agencies. So to give you the figures, maybe each day we enter in our customers' home 40,000 times, and we are making about 70 million kilometers a year.
So a big business, and your role in that big business is around the technology. Is that right, Mikhail?
Yes, mainly.
Now, your business has been based on what I call the old model, or the current model, of selling boilers and selling maintenance and breakdown insurance. This model is starting to change, isn't it? Can you tell us how that's starting to change?
Yeah, it's right, John. You're absolutely right. It's starting to change, and the question is more about the speed of this change. We don't really know today. And the old model you just described is eventually dead and gone. Not only ENGIE has now adopted a new strategy line, but we already have developed and began to sell a new offer based on the comfort as a service concept. This offer called EDERIS includes a full package of technical, energetical and financial services. Our customers can now, by signing a single contract, have a new boiler along with a maintenance and breakdown insurance and a specific financial at 0% offer, which allowed them to save money. In fact, with EDERIS, we are selling a boiler with a high level of performance and very efficient remote diagnostics packs. But it is also important to say that it is combined with our 200 technical centers network in France, because technology is not is there to support our technicians to maintain and increase the relationship with our clients. At the end, our customers have to pay a single monthly fee, about 44 euros per month, and just forget about anything else, but enjoy friendly, good, well-heated environment. This is what we are looking for.
So much more like a subscription model than the old model. Now, let's introduce my second guest, Matt Lipson. Matt, you work with a slightly grandly named Energy Systems Catapult in the UK. In a nutshell, can you tell us what the Energy Systems Catapult does and what your role is there?
Yeah. Hi, John, and thanks for having me on the podcast. The Energy Systems Catapult is a not-for-profit set up by government to help the energy sector innovate. And my role there is I head up a team that focuses on consumer insight. And we are a hybrid kind of market research, digital design consultancy type offering that specializes in trials, real world experiments to help other parties move forward from idea to impact faster with less effort. And we work with others across the Catapult to use sensors to see beyond what people say so that you can understand what they're actually doing, because with energy in particular, people often use it unconsciously without thinking, so it's hard for them to explain what they're doing and describe that in accurate detail. And we also work with people who have modeling capability at the building, area and national scale to relate the behavior we see to the rest of the energy system. The important things matter.
And you're using this to innovate around providing comfort to customers rather than providing kilowatt hours to customers, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right, John. So we got asked to do some work for the UK government and a bunch of larger energy players around 6 years ago, and they asked us to look at, you know, how can we decarbonize heat, which is one of the perhaps more challenging aspects of meeting our climate change commitments. And we realized that the smart home offered unique opportunities, both to consumers to get kind of better experiences from energy, but also across the entire energy system. So we started to upgrade homes around the country in the UK to the 2020s level of data and control. And we gradually discovered that if you show people information about the cost of heating their home in different ways, so you can imagine whole home, all day, one price, or part of your home, perhaps for a slightly lower temperature, just for part of the day for a different price, it is completely transformative. So you find bill payers who aren't particularly interested in energy, maybe they've switched, perhaps not, become discerning customers, the lifeblood of any market, just by seeing these two options, because they then realize which they prefer and they start asking you about, well, what would it cost me to have that room a bit warmer or that one a bit cooler? So starting from there, we realized that there was something quite powerful here, potentially, that might enable us to tackle this challenge. We took it one step further. We asked consumers whether they might prefer to buy a warm home rather than units of fuel, which is not a new concept to people who work in the energy sector. We might call it heat as a service, part of an energy as a service offering, which is just one business model amongst many. But this capability for consumers to decide what outcome they want, what thing they get, and get a fixed price for that, is at the heart of lots and lots of different business models. So we took that a bit further and started to think through in detail how might you do that in the real world, and designed a starter for 10 energy as a service offer, which, I mean, we would expect the sector to move forward. So just to reiterate, we're a not-for-profit, we're not trying to set up a business, we're trying to learn how to accelerate other people's business ambitions, and I can tell you a bit more about that if you're interested.
Great. So it sounds in one way, Matt, like you strategically were setting up in this direction, but in another way, that by listening to customers, you allowed customers to steer you to this type of trial and project, looking at selling comfort rather than kilowatt hours. How much is strategy was listening to customers, or what combination of both?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. What we realized early on is that at the end of every pipe and every wire sits a consumer. And if they don't like what's coming out of the pipes and wires, or they can't use that stuff to get the things that they want, they won't be very happy to pay for energy today, but also for the infrastructure overhaul that's required to decarbonize our energy system. So we realized early on that we really need to understand what consumers need, want, value, if we are to design, you know, a low carbon system that they actually want. And without their support, it's going to be difficult to drive the change that's required through. So we just applied what is actually a standard approach in many sectors to the energy system, and it was, and maybe it's a bit less common in the energy sector.
I think you're right there. The energy sector is probably not famous for being customer centric at the moment, although it is moving more in that direction. Matt, we'll come back to some of the details of what you're doing, but now let's introduce my final guest, Charmaine Coutinho, principal analyst here at Delta. Welcome back, Charmaine. Now, the concept of heat as a service is bandied around a lot at the moment. You see it on PowerPoint slides, you hear people talking about it. Can you break down that concept a bit for us, Charmaine, and just make it a bit realer rather than a grand aspiration of heat as a service?
Thanks, John, and it's great to be back. So in our research here at Delta, we've identified three different types of business models associated with energy as a service. And I mean, that's an interesting point to start with. We're talking about heat as a service specifically, but we do see energy when you're incorporating electricity and heat as other different types of business models in this area. So on the kind of less complex end, we have effectively what is an asset leasing model. So a product or service that is fundamentally financed by a third party, and that's offered to customers with a finance package. Additionally, we see that model developing to our second model, which adds on maintenance and servicing aspects. And that really focuses on making sure that that product or asset within a customer's home is performing optimally. And Michelle talked about some of those elements in the way that NG is doing that. And then the third, more complex model is really based around the provision of an output or an end goal in itself. So comfort, heat, and that really incorporates the element of fuel. So if that asset uses electricity or gas, incorporating that into a package for the end customer. And it really looks at what is the customer getting at the end point rather than what products and services can we or one as a service provider put forth to that customer.
Okay, so starting then with asset leasing or some form of asset subscription, then adding maintenance, then maybe adding energy supply and through to providing an outcome or a service.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think heat is particularly interesting because you can power a heat product either by electricity or gas. So that last point is pretty critical about what you do with your energy fuel supply provision.
And what we're seeing at the moment is a number of projects on this spectrum popping up across Europe. So I think it's a fascinating time to be talking about this. Let's come back to Mikhail, to NG. So I'm interested in you've talked a bit about what's driving NG to change its model. You used to sell boilers and maintenance separately. Now you sell or offer the monthly fee for boiler and maintenance combined. What are you changing this because you're having to, or are you changing this because you really want to and see a big opportunity?
That's a good question, John. I agree. Our model was good anyway, but times are changing, and our business is undergoing profound and rapid changes brought on by large societal, technological, and economical developments. To face that, in fact, NG Home Services has to adopt a new and a clever positioning in the market. In fact, our goal is now to be recognized as a comfort provider. It's a little bit more ambitious than a simple heater as a service offer, because we strongly believe that our clients would prefer to see NG Home Service as a comfort partner rather than technical operator of heating system. Let's say peace of mind as a service. That means a lot of things for us, of course. That means we have to develop a new range of reliable, efficient equipment with economy rates contracts. Our customers are waiting more and more for all-in-one solutions for their heating system, not only technical solutions, but package offers specifically designed so that it can be used as a convenient, secure, and comfortable solution.
So are you, for us, are you, are you seeing pull from customers for this, Michael? Are you seeing customers actively interested in this, or are you having to push this to customers, would you say?
In fact, we are making both. We are pushing and we are hearing our customers. They want something, and we are the first to provide it. So where to find the good way?
Yeah, I guess a balance between educating them with or explaining a new type of offer to them, that takes a bit of time.
You've got the point. It is exactly that.
Yeah. Matt, if we come back to your project, so you're running some trials at the moment. Can you help me understand a bit about what the customer offer actually is? If I'm a customer and you're offering me comfort, what can I choose, or what am I buying? If I'm a customer, how would you explain that offer to me?
Yeah, sure, John. So we've done lots and lots of different bits of research over the 6 years on this topic for ourselves and initially and for government, but more recently for different third parties who are exploring how to enter this space. The start of our journey, as I said earlier, was just exploring with helping people understand the cost of heating their home in different ways. We then realized actually there was something very important here in terms of giving them control over the outcomes they get. And there was no language of service. So we decided to create a starter for 10 and just design something from scratch. I expect the sector would move it forward very rapidly. But what ours involved was offering consumers the chance to buy warm hours instead of kilowatt hours. We did lots of co-creation with consumers to define what we meant by a warm hour and changed it loads during the course of those interactions with consumers. But in the end, a warm hour was an hour when any of their rooms was warm. That's what they expected it to be. So there'd be 0 to 24 hours a day. And we sold them a heat plan, which was a fixed price for a certain number of warm hours, which creates a kind of hence a warm hour, kind of miles per gallon, if you like, for the home. And what we found in our co-creation with consumers is that they could really quickly get their head around that, and that they started to compare themselves with one another. So one person might say to another, how come I'm paying 20 pence per warm hour when you're only paying 10 pence per warm hour? And very quickly they would realize that it costs more to heat, you know, a big old home than a small new one.
Okay. Matt, the warm hour then is a metric. That's what you're selling. You're selling a warm hour, and the price per warm hour will be different for different customers based on their house and how well insulated it is, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I think the price a business chooses to charge for a warm hour or for a heat plan with a certain number of warm hours is a commercial decision. But the cost of delivery definitely does depend on the building physics, but also on the weather and various other characteristics. In our plans, a bit like a mobile phone contract, there was a set number of hours within a plan, and you could buy extra hours if you wanted to. And there was a certain amount of freedom consumers had. The way we did it, what we were doing was using smart control to help consumers discover how many hours they wanted, what temperatures they liked, which rooms they wanted warm, so that they could buy the right plan for them.
Okay. And you've got how many customers on these sorts of plans at the moment, or how big's your trial or the project?
So the first trial we've done looking at this in the real world was last winter, so it finished a year ago almost, and where we offered 100 homes the chance, just under 100 homes in the end, the chance to buy one of three plans. There were three, so there was the cheapest plan was a fixed plan, which came with a certain number of hours, the hours in their schedule, and it was the cheapest because they weren't able to adjust their schedule. They could change, they could add hours by buying extras, but they couldn't adjust their schedule. There was a mid-price plan, which was a flexi plan, which came with a kind of bundle of spare hours in their plan. And it was flexible in the sense they could move them and reschedule them whenever they wanted. And then there was a premium plan, which was our unlimited offer. And each of those plans was priced using data for each of the homes in our trial. So give them a bespoke set of three plans and with three bespoke prices.
So we've got now, if we come back to that spectrum, Charmaine, you described at the beginning, NG are on the selling a subscription or monthly fee for a boiler and the maintenance included, so peace of mind around your heating system for a monthly fee. The energy systems catapult are at the end of the spectrum in terms of offering comfort. Can you characterize a bit across Europe how much activity we see at various parts of this spectrum? What we've heard about commonplace at the moment, or is this part of an emerging trend?
Yeah, for sure, John. I mean, you referenced it earlier in the introduction. There are so many thought pieces and PowerPoint presentations about energy as a service. But what's really nice about this podcast is actually it's two really excellent examples of commercial business actually putting something out in the market. So obviously not the catapult, but NG doing their offerings and the catapult with their partners. And one of the things that is really interesting is we haven't seen to date many examples of the more complex heat as a service offerings. So there are many examples of the asset leasing and financing models, but with the additional services and with the heat element to provide that comfort level, it's very, very few. So a lot of interest across Europe, but very few commercial commercially available models we see. And something, I'm not really sure
something
why.
Something you can see a lot of in the next year, Charmaine?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think I definitely think there's been a pace of change in terms of launches in the last 6 to 12 months. We've seen more people announcing these type of propositions, and they're very complex to do. It's not an easy sell. So I can, that's one of the reasons why there probably isn't many of them around. And it's definitely the direction of travel we see many different types of energy companies looking towards.
On that not easy to do, let's turn our attention a bit now to the risks. So you could think of technology risk, performance risk, lots of different types of risks involved in doing this. Mikhail, can we start with what you're doing at NG? And I guess you're taking the technical risk of the boiler and taking responsibility for that. Can you tell us a bit about how you see the risks and how you're managing these?
In a few words, if risks are under control, we are facing new technologies, and we know that we have to continue to learn by walking, clearly. And if we have a long history as a service provider and operator, our teams have a deep knowledge of our markets and claims. And to be clear, to be part of the group like NG, for which digital is part of the strategy, it's obviously a nice inner hand. Besides, NG Home Service has invested amount of money in two main points. The first one is the one, we have to develop and secure a solid technology. And two, to upgrade the skills of our technicians. It's very important. And then the third point is to build a strong back office. So in terms of risk, I'm very confident. But one challenge for us consists to help our clients to accept this kind of new services at home. We talked about that before. And how that will, and this will take time. We know that. And we are just at the beginning of the history. That's why we will move forward in small, reliable and fast steps. Even knowing where we want to go, but we have to go in that way if we want to secure the approach.
Okay, so you can help to manage some of the risks through technology. For example, we will see more and more connected boilers in the future across Europe where you can use remote diagnostics, but also your strategy is to be quite pragmatic and take small steps, learn the risks, understand the risks, and learn by doing. Matt, in terms of the risks on your model, I can imagine risk managers at companies tearing their hair out and thinking, what if the customer opens the window, or what if the heating appliance doesn't operate as efficiently as we think it would? How do you think about risks and the industry partners you're working with? What's your perception of their attitude to these sorts of risks?
Yeah, I mean, our role is to accelerate the market by showing the art of the possible. So there are risks here, but we believe they're manageable. And that's why we've done things in the real world to demonstrate that they're manageable. I think there's three kinds of risk, if I was to categorize them, at that more, you know, more complex delivering, in our case, heat as a service, or if you added cooling, comfort as a service. First is really about understanding consumer expectations, so that you know what service they want, but you've also perhaps shaped their expectations so that they understand what's not possible, and you've bounded their expectations so that they're clear on what's included and what's excluded. That's, in our case, what the concept of the extra is all about. The second one is really about pricing the cost of meeting those expectations and doing that in a way that's attractive to consumers, but also affordable to businesses. And then the third is that consumers are going to need protecting in this kind of smarter new energy world. And unless industry can find out a way of doing that, regulators will impose something, I think, in the fullness of time. So those are the three challenges. And I guess we take different approaches to kind of thinking through how we might be able to manage those, but perhaps you'd like some examples.
I would love examples, Matt, but I'm also keeping a beady eye on how time is rushing past us. What I think we'll do now, or the common point I'm hearing from both of you actually, and from the work we do at Delta, is that technology is the attitude to risk that's important, the learning by doing, the understanding the risks, and then technology helps to manage some of those risks through things like remote monitoring or sensors in homes or understanding heat loss in buildings through through measuring temperature at different parts of the home. So the risk seems like a big question, but unless you explore it and work out ways to manage it, then it's going to be hard to move forwards. So we've got just a couple of minutes left. What I'd like to do to finish with is ask each of you where you think your heat as a service type models will be in the next few years. So if you had to look forward into your crystal ball, Michael, how big a part of Engie's business will this be? Matt, what do you think will happen in terms of industry adopting the sort of models you're working on at the moment? And Charmaine, across Europe in 3 to 5 years, will this become widespread? So maybe starting with Mikhail, where will this be at Engie in the next few years, do you think?
Do you want me to give some explanation about what our customers are waiting, or you want me to go through directly to the forward 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, more to the 3 to 5 years, I think.
All right.
Look at that.
Okay. So, in fact, we don't know exactly at time where and what could be the big numbers. Anyway, we know, and I do believe that customers are waiting for that kind of solution. We are sure of that, and they don't care about technologies. They want services. So by 2020, we are thinking that we will reach at least 20,000 services-based heating offering, at least. And in the meantime, it is very important for us. We will continue to develop new lines of connected products. So we are not heaters are not the main lines, product lines, and technical analytics to keep the predictive maintenance to have more efficient services. We are continuing to move. For instance, we could open new services on other items. Why not heat pump, or electrical vehicle, or battery, or photovoltaic? And at the end, we could manage the home energy as a service in the same time of energetic transition.
Yeah, I guess, okay, so picking up Charmaine's point about heat as a service just being one aspect of energy as a service, or more service-based energy models. Matt, from your side, in your crystal ball, how widely has this been adopted in the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, we see lots of interest from different players, but I'm not really here to tell you what the future will be like. My role is instead to make sure that consumers like the future. There are clearly lots of opportunities for retailers, product manufacturers, networks, But I guess one I need to highlight is the opportunity for governments as well. So just very briefly, we know that low carbon is going to need to be as good as or ideally better than high carbon before it becomes the choice for the mass market. And I think services offer a route for government to decarbonize in a way consumers will support and businesses will support. And that's because people care more about their experience than how it's delivered. So as long as they can get the comfort they want, they don't really mind how that's delivered, whether that's from a gas boiler, a heat pump, a district heating system, a hydrogen boiler, a biomass boiler, or anything else. After all, if you enjoy a meal, you don't often ask what oven it's cooked in.
I like the analogy.
That opens up a new policy option for government to impose a kind of long-term technology neutral carbon target and leave service providers free to deliver service without the carbon. But in order to help answer your question, sorry to avoid it initially, of how large that might be, I think there's a chicken and egg problem, which is how can businesses invest in new business models without understanding the policy trajectory? And similarly, how can governments, you know, roll out new policies without having some understanding of what business models might exist? But if they could work together, government and industry, they could show how well things could work in practice and give everybody the confidence they need. So in order to kind of help test and learn in the real world, we've kind of created a living lab from the smart homes we've been working with, so that the public and private sector can come together to crack that chicken and egg problem and learn how to harness market forces to deliver a decarbonisation consumers will support, you know, and to design high quality, low carbon heating products and services, but of a wide range, all the way from the stuff I've been talking about to the stuff Mikhail's been talking about and innumerable other things that we haven't even discovered yet. And I think that's the thing which will make the difference, is a bit of an ability for different types of party to come together to design the future that we all want.
So, and I guess what we've seen here is ENGIE as a commercial entity doing something new, learning by doing, with your work, Matt, again, learning by doing in a different way. Charmaine, when you look at the heating and energy industry across Europe, in how much appetite do you see for this learning by doing? And in 3 to 5 years, is there sufficient appetite to try these new things that we'll see many more heaters and service offerings?
Well, I think to answer your first part of your question, I think there is significantly more appetite for learning by doing in small steps. So the way that Mikhail outlined is, you know, a really classic agile way of learning for new disruptive technologies and propositions and how to bring them to market quickly, especially when you're putting the customer at the centre of that. So actually getting customer feedback throughout the product development process rather than at the end where there's a fully formed project. So I think that's really important. And I think we see more and more of that, not just around energies or heat as a service, but in other types of new energy propositions. I think in terms of how widespread will it be? Well, it's obvious, but different propositions will appeal to different types of customers. One of the guests mentioned the desire to move to much more kind of service-based propositions, and that reflects the wider society changes. So I think that's an important piece that will drive, from a customer's perspective, some of these business models. I also think that there are so many different types of new energy technologies. So Mikhail again referred to this. What about EVs? What about heat pumps? And the fact there are so many technologies that are proliferating, customers will probably want a level of simplification around their energy provision, whether that's the asset, whether it's the service. So simplifying all of these technologies and concepts into one as a service proposition is very appealing to most customers, I imagine. So from that perspective, I think we'll see a lot more in the next 3 to 5 years, especially as people learn, test and learn, costs come down, all that kind of stuff. I think based on the last 6 months, I imagine we'll see many, many more.
Great. Well, thank you to my guests. I think we've shown on this podcast that heat as a service will be more than a passing fashion and likely a significant part of the future for the heating and energy industry across Europe. Many, many thanks to Mikhail for your time and sharing what ENGIE is doing. Matt.
Thank you, it was a pleasure.
Matt, likewise to you from the Energy Systems Catapult in your living lab.
It was a great pleasure. It's good to talk to other people who are grappling with these challenges.
And Charmaine, as always, for your observations and thoughts on what's happening across Europe. Thanks to all of you. Thanks for listening. And we hope you enjoyed the podcast and look forward to welcoming you back next week. Goodbye.